Welcome to the Millionaire Secrets Podcast, where the most successful people in the world share their secrets to help you create the awesome life you desire. Welcome to another episode of Millionaire Secrets. Jeff Lerner, your host, always so excited to be back with you, getting to have incredible conversations with incredible people. Today is no exception to that. We are joined by Jay Samet. Samet rhymes with damn it, and this is going to be a good conversation, damn it. Trust me. We have so much to cover here. If you're not familiar with Jay, he's considered one of the leading experts in the world on disruption and innovation. He consults with billionaires. He consults with presidents. He's been a massively successful entrepreneur of his own right, helped grow company, a lot of the big companies that we talk about and hear about in the world now. Think like take LinkedIn, for example, worked with them before we'd all heard of them and helped them become who they are. Jay is also a best-selling author. Two phenomenal books, Disrupt You and his newest book, Future Proofing You, which, man, it hits close to home for me because it's right there. He's in the same business I am in some regards, which is showing people what's possible for their life. And then when they don't believe him, he says, I'm going to prove it to you. And Jay, I'm so grateful to have you on the show, man. Welcome to Millionaire Secrets.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
I'm so glad you're here. I feel like the book is a great place to start. You know, I was watching your interview with Tom Bilyeu, who did obviously your foreword, and you guys were having a moment talking about that email that you got where essentially, it's funny, just like this hit me so close to home because I get these emails every day where people are like, it's not possible. It won't work for me. I forget exactly what the guy said, but basically I can't become successful in this world. And your magic formulas don't apply to me for whatever reason. And that was in reference to your last book. And you took that as a personal challenge, which is what became this book. Am I getting that story right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been a NASDAQ CEO and run big companies. And when you do that, your inbox is filled with, I hate you, we're suing you. You know, it's just problem, problem, problem. When I wrote Disrupt You, the biggest surprise was that I've heard from people in 140 countries. It's in over a dozen languages that people, lives have changed and they become successful. And I didn't do the work, they did, right? You know, the reason why it's called Disrupt You is it's, you know, you have to look inside. Everybody thinks it's changing the world, but nobody thinks it's changing themselves. But then I got this email from a millennial that said, this is all motivational, but I could never do it. And it gnawed at me. Why am I not able to reach this person, this generation? So I had this audacious, crazy idea. What if I took a homeless immigrant, mentored him one day a week for a year, gave him no capital, no introductions, no Rolodex, no level playing field. Could he go from that? And spoiler alert, because that's the story that's in Future Proofing You, he goes from welfare to self-made millionaire in under a year. Now, this isn't a get-rich-quick scheme. This was 7 days a week for him. This was not watching TV, not staring at social media for 4 hours a day, you know, not going to the game. No dating. This was, you know, he was willing to work harder than most people will for a year so he can live the way most people can for the rest of his life. And then I took those sessions and condensed it down to what I call 12 truths. If you follow these 12 truths, you will have the same results. It's not a maybe. You know, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Well, it's interesting you say it's not get rich quick. Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy how much we're in the same business, not even the same business, just the same paradigm of living where it's like, you believe this, I believe this. Some people agree with us. Some people don't. Some people fight us. Some people hate us. Some people love us. Some people try it. They don't really commit to it. Some people commit and they succeed in all shades of outcomes. But this idea that it's not get rich quick, I'm actually going to suggest it actually kind of is, because if you think about it, the guy was a millionaire in a year.
Yeah.
Most people aren't millionaires in a year. Most people get poor slow.
No, most people start off poor and keep digging.
right.
Most people don't try, right? Fear of failure stops most people in their tracks. You're actually bred that way. You're raised, your well-wishers, your parents, your teachers, they try to shield you from failing and feeling that pain when in fact you're being raised by people that gave up on their dreams. Our educational system is designed for you to be fit in a box and become a worker and go to a job where you're making somebody else's dream come true. They pay you enough to show up, not enough to care, not enough to live the way you want. And you said we're in the same business. We're not, from the standpoint of this isn't a business. You right. can't hire me. I don't do coaching. You can't get a t-shirt with my name on it. I am doing this with whatever time I have left on the planet because we need to create more entrepreneurs. The pandemic wiped out mom and pop businesses globally, wiped out the middle class. And if you don't have a middle class, you don't have democracy. What I saw in January in our nation's capital was thousands of people feeling left out, left behind, fighting over leftovers. The bottom 140 million Americans own less than 1% of this country. Most have a negative net worth. So if I can show those people that it's possible, that it's probable, and you know, I start off the book explaining brighter people don't end up richer. People that go to better schools don't end up richer. Yet pre-pandemic, every 48 hours, there's a new self-made billionaire with a B. Let that sink in. Now it's every 36 hours. So what are they doing different? Can it be learned? Kylie Jenner lives down the street from me. She hit self-made billionaire status at 22. What a slacker I am, okay? Now you could say she's a Kardashian, but there were no billionaires in the Kardashian. So what is it that she figured out? Well, we're one click away from 5 billion people. You only have to be right for a nanosecond to make $1 million or change the world.
So, man, first of all, I didn't know that stat about a billionaire. So there's a new self-made billionaire every 36 hours. It was 48. What I do know is that there are 1,700 new millionaires. And this is actually in the intro to this show, because the show is Millionaire Secrets. There's 1,700 new millionaires every day, just in the United States. And around the world, it's over 4,000. So to your point, you know, and I say the same business, I just mean kind of the business of living. What is it that we're about? We're in the same trade of evangelism. How about, you know, like,
absolutely.
There is so much opportunity out there. It's just not packaged and served in the ways and in the places that society might lead you to believe is where you would go to access those opportunities, vis-a-vis schools and jobs. Right.
And here's what's really amazing post-pandemic. We've learned that remote workers actually are more productive, have less turnover, cost a company less. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But that also means you no longer have to live in a major city with high rent or even in a first world country. So the biggest surprise when I wrote Disrupt You is one of the ways I was giving back is I was teaching how to build a high-tech startup at the university level. I had young people do $100 million the first year. I mean, mind-blowing. But I was writing for that audience. I didn't expect the book to be in Chinese and Croatian and Lithuanian and Urdu and all these languages, because people around the world are thirsting for the same information. And what I'm trying to show people are universal truths. These aren't things of the moment. And the young man, Vin, who I mentored in this, what kept him going that year was he knew that he was going to take the next year off and travel the world and live like he's never been able to. Now, you can't live the rest of your life on $1 million.
Right.
But he knew he was future-proof. He knew that anytime he wanted to start again, he could from anywhere. And he now has multinational clients, something that, you know, sleeping on the sofa of some other welfare person's place, he couldn't have imagined. And so it all starts with that growth mindset. And, you know, he didn't find this out until he read the book. I didn't tell him this. But in our first meeting, I lied to him. I'm not proud of lying, but there was a reason. There's a psychological effect called the Pygmalion effect. Mm-hmm. Professor went to school, tested all the kids, told the teachers these three would be super learners, super achievers. And at the end of the year, those three kids excelled. But the professor lied. He just picked three names out of a hat. If you tell people they're special and you treat them special, they become special. So mm-hmm. I told Vin, I interviewed over 100 candidates and he was the only one with all the attributes to be a self-made millionaire. When in fact, he's the only person. I interviewed because I didn't want to cherry pick the perfect candidate. But him saying that somebody else believed that he could do it got him over his own inability to see it in the mirror.
And in Western psychology, that's also, I think, believe called the Rosenthal effect. And it, to say it again, and here's the thing, this is a conversation about you, not me, but I'm going to share with you just a little bit of biographical information to corroborate what you're saying. But it basically says, whatever is expected of a person, that person, essentially you osmose the expectations and it becomes your own expectations of self. And we know that we in life tend to get what we expect. And so our expectations go up because someone else has higher expectations of us. And then we naturally tend to achieve more.
It works the other way.
Yes, it does.
When I'm dyslexic, when I was in first grade and they had reading groups, I grew up in Philadelphia, they had the Eagles, the Hawks, and the Mud Hens, right? You don't have to be a genius to figure out that your life has pretty much been determined when you're a mud hen at 5 or 6 years old. You know, I was written off. Walt Disney was dyslexic, okay? You know, the list goes on and on. 1 out of 3 CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are dyslexic. So it turns out we're not stupid. We just think differently, which is a huge competitive advantage. So how people treat you your whole life, you have to break out of that. And so Disrupt You was really about doing plastic surgery, but you hold the scalpel. Because if you can change that voice in your head when you realize your personality is malleable, changing the world is easy because it's just made up of a whole bunch of people that aren't trying the way you are. Now, I've run companies with hundreds of thousands of employees, and I can tell you out of 300,000 employees, there may be 5 or 6 that are making a difference. The rest are just showing up and, you know, doing enough to go have their vacation and enjoy life for 2 weeks a year. It makes no sense. But once people break out of the matrix, once they realize that this is achievable, when Vin hit nearly $70,000 in his first 30 days, I didn't have to motivate him anymore. My bigger concern was his health because, you know, he was working around the clock.
Right.
He had to sleep. But it is exhilarating to know that you can start at any time. You don't have to say, oh, I failed at this, I did that. As a VC, I'd rather invest in somebody that's failed before than somebody that's never tried, because they learned a lot on somebody else's dime. When you fail, you don't end up where you started. You either earn or you learn, but either way, you're propelled forward. I mean, I like to tell the story of two guys I worked with at the beginning of my career that had a genius idea. The company was called Trafo Data. They were going to hook up computers to traffic lights.
Right.
But not a single city planner understood what they were talking about. So Bill Gates and Paul Allen's first company went belly up. Their second one was Microsoft that did a little better. I can go on and on of how many of the billion-dollar companies you have today were founded by people that had already been bankrupt once. Again, Walt Disney, Henry Ford, go on and on and on. But the only person that can stop you is you.
So again, just so you know, I'm a high school dropout. I was a professional jazz musician. That was my achievement in my 20s, which was actually pretty awesome, but I was very poor. And I borrowed a bunch of money to open a couple franchise restaurants back in 2006, 2007, when they would give anyone with a pulse a lot, way more money than they should. Lost it all in the Great Recession, was $500,000 in debt as a piano player. Went online, paid it all off in 18 months with affiliate marketing, and then was on the brink of losing it all again a few years ago and started doing what I'm doing, which scaled to about $5 million from $1 to $5 million a month in less than 2 years. And
phenomenal.
And the reason, again, I share that with you because I may not quite be Vin, although I was nearly homeless. I got evicted and was living in my ex-wife's parents' house when I started this ride, but I am living proof of what you're describing. And that's why I'm in the business I'm in.
Yeah.
And it's why I know the deep and profound truth of what you're talking about. But it's also, why I'm intimately exposed to the same objections that I'm sure you get, which is people are endlessly inventive in finding ways in which universal principles don't apply to them if they don't fit their confirmation bias and their own beliefs about their own life.
Well, it's interesting. Of online courses, you know, an engineering course, any type of course that you could take, when you look at the data of paid courses where people were paying to take, you know, to learn a, you know, foreign mm-hmm. language, learn a skill, something that they said they want to do, they've spent their own money to get the privilege to do that. Less than 20% complete a course. And that's across almost any field you can come up with. So people tap out. And motivation is kind of like a shower, you know, you need it regularly. And that's where, you know, what you do comes in. That's where what Tom does. It's so important for people to understand, because if you're, and this is when you mentor, you learn. And what I learned about the new generation is they live in a social media world where you see the greatest hits reel of everybody else's life or make-believe right. lives. It's kind of like watching baseball on the evening news. It looks like this amazingly fast-paced sport. Guy hits the ball, guy runs, he slides it up. I've been to one baseball game in my life. I mean, I've seen grass grow faster. It happened to be, by weird coincidence, the only no-hitter in like 11 years. And I'm trying to keep my two sons from being bored out of their skull. But my point is, people are thinking that everybody else, it's just happening for them.
Right.
They're not seeing a failure. There's an organization called Fuck Up Nights that I write about in Future Proofing You that has failed founders go out and talk about their failures so that people don't feel alone with their struggles. And once you start realizing that failing is part of the process, it's easy. Now, my big pet peeve is there's a whole bunch of people talking nonsense online, which is why I wrote the book. There's very few books. There's no other book where somebody said, I'll put my life's reputation on the line and I'll pick a person and I'll show that this can be done. Mm-hmm. But there's people out there that say fear isn't real. And fear is the biggest thing that stops most people. You know, overcome your fears, get past your fears. BS, BS. You cannot. We are hardwired with fear. There's nothing you can do. You will be fearful. Your lizard brain has the fight or flight response. It's the first thing before any rational thought. But you can prioritize fears. So if you're afraid of losing your money, losing somebody else's money, losing your pride, losing your job, losing whatever stopping you from moving forward. I tell people, imagine that a truck full of dynamite's coming down the sidewalk and going to smash into you. What are you going to do, Jeff? You're going to stand there? You're afraid that you're going to look silly? No, you're going to jump out of the way. Because it's an existential threat. If you don't do something, you will die. So if you're at a job that isn't giving you a life and you trade a week for it, a year for it, 10 years, you're going to wake up one day and have given up the most precious thing, your life, for what? And if you don't believe me, go visit your grandparents or seniors and ask them their biggest regret. And it's never a failure. It's what they failed to try. So yes, you had a dream, you want to be a jazz musician. You lived that dream. It may not have had the conclusion that you wanted, but at least it's not nagging at you, what if, what mm-hmm. if, what if, okay? I ran the biggest rock and roll label in the world, okay? Mm-hmm. I was president at EMI. I met the ones that tried. Now, some of them are household names and they've enriched our lives, and most, you know, got a record deal and it didn't go anywhere. But the life is so much more fulfilling if you have a purpose. And that's one of the 12 truths, is if you have a purpose that will get you through that motivation. For me, I didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. I bought into life and society's promise, go to school, get good grades, live happily ever after. Graduated in a recession and there's no jobs. And then when there are jobs, it dawned on me, if that job exists, that means somebody else has had that job, which means there's people with more experience, which means this is not a game that makes any sense. So I had two sons when I was young and I wanted a better life for them. And that motivation kept me through all the scars that I have on my back, you know, and that propelled me forward. and you look at the people that have overcome things, and this is why one out of three Fortune 500 companies is founded by an immigrant or the first generation child of an immigrant. Because you may see an immigrant sweeping up or stocking a grocery store or whatever, but that's not their identity. That is, they realize that's one step on a rung of a ladder that they started when they decided to give up right. where they are to try something better. So they already have the momentum. So how do you get that momentum into your thinking? How do you get it into your life? And that's why I organize the 12 truths in a way that is accessible to everyone, no matter where you're starting from.
Yeah, it's so, so cool. I cannot wait. I have not read the book. I cannot wait to read the story. It's on audiobook, I assume.
Yes, Audible, it's an audio.
I mean, I can't wait to hear the story. I mean, just, you know, I have literally, I mean, in our content team, we have talked about doing what you're describing as like video content, like a TV show or just our own YouTube series of like, let's go find somebody. And whether it's put them through our program or just teach them our strategies, you know, because I 100% believe, I don't know if I haven't had the gumption or it just hasn't been in the resources, or maybe I've just been timid to do it. But like, I 100% believe not only, I don't think Vin was an anomaly. I think you could do it again. I bet you could do it 100 times and probably.
Well, I just started a Facebook group for 1,000 people around the world to see if okay. we could do 1,000 this year. But it's interesting. Tom Bilyeu was a huge fan of my first book, Disrupt You. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said it changed his thinking. It's just all kinds of very gracious and whatever. And so when I came up with this crazy idea for future-proofing you, I went over with Vin before we started mentoring sessions and said, Tom, why don't we, you know, film them with you and then we'll have this great thing. And we filmed the first one. And basically afterwards, you know, Tom's off camera, like, this guy doesn't believe this. This guy's not going to make it. Like, you know, there's just no way. So he and I regret that we didn't continue filming them.
Interesting.
But it's so easy to understand why people aren't connecting the dots, because they haven't seen it. You know, there's an intimidation that, you know, that person's at the big company. They must be smarter, better, this or that. Mm-hmm. When in fact, most people employed by your giant companies are actually failures, career failures. There's a thing called the Peter Principle. You rise to your level of incompetence.
Yeah.
If a teacher's great with students, they make them principal. Principal doesn't deal with students. They deal with other teachers. If they're bad at that, they stay principal their whole career. If they're good at it, they move to you know, Board of Education, which deals with politicians and budgets. If they're bad at that, they're stuck with the Board of Education forever, right? So most people in these big companies have an imposter syndrome. They know that they're stuck. They can't do it or whatever. And they don't want to get found out. And their whole life is about self-preserving that job. Well, if you go in, and this is truth number three in the book, if you buy into this premise that I talked about, that everybody has fear, now you can turn the table and realize that person that you're selling has those same fears. So if you can access those fears, and I don't mean mafiosa style, hey, buy from me. And I'll give you a great example. It's hard to imagine, but three elections ago, not a single presidential candidate spent a penny on social media advertising. Hmm. And I had a startup that was an ad platform. And I wrote a white paper that social media would pick the next president of the United States. I was off by 4 years. But I'm looking at the billions they're spending. And I said, I want to get a piece of this. But the campaign directors were old guys that, you know, did TV and radio and billboards for, you know, their entire life. You're not going to mm-hmm. change them. So I set up meetings with all four of the campaign managers of the four leading candidates. And I thanked them the second I walked in for taking the meeting. And it got like 10 minutes. You flew halfway around the country for 10 minutes. And thank you for meeting me on this day, because tomorrow I'm in Boston. Well, that's where Romney is. And then I'm in Texas. And suddenly, wait, he's meeting with my competition. If they do this and I don't, and that other guy wins, I'll never get hired again. I guess I got to pay attention to this. And I've done this in major companies all the time. And I ended up with all of them as clients and changed the way political elections are done. That startup 18 months later was acquired by News Corp for $200 million. never had a profit. But I explain to people how those things work, why companies will spend big bucks for a startup that doesn't make money. This eludes most people that aren't in this world, or they're like, I'm not an engineer. I can't do anything in tech. Really? How many hours a day are you on that phone? I mean, that phone's more powerful than the computers that put a man on the moon. You know, Steve Jobs never wrote a line of code. He couldn't read code, okay? But he created a trillion-dollar company. Here's the two secrets if you don't have time to read a book. You only need two things for success: insight and perseverance. Everything else can be hired. My first company, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I saw Star Wars and I go, oh my God, special effects would be the coolest way to make a living. Well, I knew no one in Hollywood. I knew nothing about special effects and nothing about computers. Not a material issue. So I started a company for $1 called Jasmine Productions. J. Allen Salmon, it's mine. But I knew nobody with a feature film is going to trust that picture on a 21-year-old kid with no background. So I just made myself head of sales, not head of the company. Went around and hustled, and I got some independent little guys that couldn't afford Lucas and ILM. And then you hire the people that know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that so strange? I mean, do you think Bill Gates wrote a line of code? He went out and hired somebody that had an operating system and licensed the operating system. His dad was a lawyer. And it can start with the simplest of problem. I teach people in the book how to get that insight. I have a system called 3 problems a day for a month. Starting today, not tomorrow, write down 3 problems in your life, Jeff. Just write them down. And do that every day for a month. First day is kind of easy. Second day, maybe you have. By third day, you're tapping out and saying, I have no problems. Because you've been on autopilot for every ounce of your day. Larry Tursky, who I became friends with, he was doing this. And one morning, he's taking his medicine, the phone rings, gets off the phone. He goes, wait a second, did I take my pill or didn't I? Well, if I take too many, that's not good. If I don't take enough, that's not good. Wait, I have a problem. And that evolved into taking a Happy Meal watch, putting it on a pill bottle. So you can look at the pill bottle. I opened it 3 minutes ago. Oh, I opened it 8 hours ago. Then you add Bluetooth. Now I can know whether grandma took her pills. And Timer Cap is sold everywhere around the world. My favorite story in Future Proofing You was something every parent can relate to. It's the middle of the week. Your child has to make for middle school some presentation on poster board and she messes up. And she's crying, mommy, mommy, go back to the store. Please, please get me another poster board. So the mom relents, goes, but before she's going to give it to her kid, takes a yardstick and makes little fine lines so the girl can write straight. Next morning, she's talking to her sister-in-law. Why don't they sell poster board like this? Make a long story short, she files a patent for it, goes to the manufacturers and she makes about $5 million. No employees, never has to leave home. It is that easy.
So I feel like what you're telling me is that this genius idea that I had over the weekend, I probably shouldn't say on the air and I should pursue, but only to illustrate your point, this is the sacrifice I'm going to make.
You should say it on the air. And let me tell you why. No one's going to steal your stupid idea.
I know that.
I tell people this is a huge thing. It takes too much work.
Yeah.
Ideas just free float in space.
So here's one. I sleep in bed with my wife. I get up before her, so I don't want my alarm to wake her up. So as a courtesy, I set it on vibrate, right? But then for a vibrating alarm to wake you up, it can't be 6 feet away or 3 feet away. I set it on the bed. Well, now I have EMF frequencies going into my head all night while I'm sleeping, just so that it's close to me in the morning when it vibrates, right? Okay. So what if I took a tiny watch battery and put it in the center of a pillow and had my pillow be a vibrating alarm clock?
Great idea.
And I don't know, have to be a mechanical engineer or understand fabrics. And I could literally make like 3 phone calls and get that made, prototyped. But instead, I'm giving it away on the air to illustrate a point. And I'm in the middle of scaling a big company. I don't have time anyways, but like, you're right. Well, these things are everywhere.
Or you just patent it and then license it to somebody that's already in the pillow business and has distribution.
Ooh, now there's a move. I have a patent guy. I should call him.
There was a saleswoman down in Florida and she worked for a conservative company that required women to wear pantyhose. and she wants to wear sandals. Well, your toes show and that looks stupid. Right. And so she starts with scissors playing around. And she eventually comes up with something. And she goes to all the companies that make hosiery and women's undergarments. And they're all run by men and they all laughed at her. And she didn't have a penny. So she went to Barnes & Noble and bought patents for dummies. No attorney, filed her own patent. And today you know it as Spanx, and she's a multi-billionaire.
Of course.
So what I have people all the time when something new comes out, I go, oh, I had that idea years ago. Yeah, and what did you do with it? The same thing that you're doing with your life. Absolutely nothing.
So let me ask you this. And actually, before I ask you this, I'm gonna again corroborate your, because I have an online education company, so we sell courses, and you made a statistical claim the other day about 20% of people finish a course. So I'm looking at the data on an 8-step course that we sell for $39 that you can complete in a week. And in the month of May, we sold 7,700 units of this course. Only 61% of people ever even logged in to access it. By step 3 out of 8, it was down to 37%, and only 23% of people actually got to the final step. So if you thought Jay was just being cynical about the human condition, he wasn't. I have data to support it. So now let me ask you this. When it comes to this idea that, you know, let's call it the Pygmalion effect, right? If you're able to reframe your expectations of yourself, you will naturally rise to the level of your expectations. And the inevitable sort of rebuttal is, yeah, but it takes opportunity, or you still have to know how to do it, or there has to be the right business, or you have to know the right person, or be in the right town or the right place or whatever. So, and we've come up with a number of scenarios here where it's like, yeah, but you could innovate, you could have this idea, you could solve this problem. But, I actually don't know what Vin did in the book. And maybe that's a starting point for the question is, would you agree that you don't even actually have to invent anything?
No, I mean, that was the basis in Disrupt You. I mean, there's tons of patents and inventions and things that are sitting there that you just have to move them towards solving a different problem. Hmm. Like we all learned in school, you know, the Gutenberg and movable type, as if he's right. Doc Brown from Back to the Future, and he invented like the flux capacitor out of whole cloth. When in fact, here's the real story. He was around in the year 1500. 1500 years before him, the Greeks were getting arthritis from squeezing olives to make olive oil. And somebody made a little olive oil press.
Right.
The world moved slower. It took 1500 years for somebody to say, if we make it a little bigger, we don't have to stomp on grapes and we can make wine with a lot less people. So they made these big wine presses. Well, it turns out everybody made them at the same time. So many people in Germany made Rieslings that year, more back 500 years ago than is made today, that every vintner went belly up. And now there's all these wine presses sitting there that you can get for free. And Gutenberg sees one and says, I put my movable type in that. Now I got something. So he didn't invent the printing press. These ideas don't come out of whole cloth. And there's so many times where you can just pivot and take something that was designed for one use and turn it around. During World War II, the US military couldn't get access to rubber. It all comes from Southeast Asia, and Japan had all that. So we spent millions of dollars, which in today's dollars would be billions, trying to make synthetic rubber. And they kept on trying, and they came up with something that had the same viscosity, but it wouldn't hold a shape. It was useless. So after the war, somebody looked at this useless thing that they spent all this money for, got a bunch of interns from Princeton on a weekend to put them in plastic little eggs, and he sold them as toy fair as silly putty.
Wow.
Play-Doh was wallpaper remover. Slinky was a spring designed for military battleships to keep gauges from moving. So you can always just take something that somebody else created and do something new with it.
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the example. I was actually trying to look it up over here, but there's a great book. I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Charles Duhigg, Power of Habit. So anyway, in what is it? Smarter, Faster, Better, I think is it? He talks about how he has numerous examples of this principle at play. But, and I think one of I think that was the book where he talked about the movie Frozen and how they created that, and in West Side Story. And like, even these great works of art that are just like, you take these very tried and true formulas and you just change one little thing.
Yeah. West Side Story was Romeo and Juliet set on the Lower East Side. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that, but it's just starts with the problem. Entrepreneurs don't sell things, they solve things. You solve something for five people, you have friends. Solve for a million, you become wealthy. Solve for a billion, you change the world, okay? If you would have told me growing up in Philadelphia that dozens of my friends would become self-made billionaires, I'd ask you what you were smoking. I didn't know what a millionaire was. I mean, I had no concept of how the world worked or any of these things. And the pace of change is, it's always changing. So if you have problems in your life, odds are other people have the same problems. If you can just come up with a small solution. A 16-year-old high school girl this year did something that just makes me feel like a complete loser who's wasted my entire life. The number four cause of death in the US is hospitals. Not disease, just set foot in the hospital. It's right. A cause of death, okay? Infection. So it dawned on her that when people get stitches and surgery, getting those things infected is a big cause of that stat. What if you could have sutures that change colors to show that there was an infection? She worked with beets and other fruits and vegetables that have different pH bound. High school kid, parents weren't doctors, weren't scientists, no lawyers in the family. Luckily, she was smart enough to go get a patent, and now she's going to college and God knows what, but she's already saved endless lives. There's a 14-year-old that came up with a better way to detect breast cancer than any medical pharmaceutical company, okay, did. You can find knowledge. You're two clicks away from either a hamster eating a mini taco or any piece of knowledge in the history of mankind. So it's not that hard. And here's where people really are missing a huge advantage today. There are millions of people that want to help you. They don't want a piece of your company. They don't want money. They don't want to get paid back. They're mentors. Don't fly solo is one of the 12 truths. Nobody is self-made. Nobody got there on their own. Everybody had a mentor. Nowadays, you're going to need a series of mentors. And I teach you how to find those mentors. It's not emailing a stranger. I'm sure you get these, will you be my mentor?
Well, like I got a PayPal request yesterday for $1,000.
That's like walking to bar and say, hey, we have my baby. It just doesn't work, okay? But I can show you how to look through people's bios on LinkedIn and find the ones that are open, how to start that dialogue and how to get that help in any field. And that can shorten your journey. I also, in Disrupt You, talk about OPM, other people's money. Big corporations will give you millions and millions of dollars and don't want a piece of your company, don't want to get paid back because you're solving a problem for them. And I've done this time and time again, hundreds of times. So it's just people aren't being taught how the world actually works and are supposed to get it through osmosis. Well, I don't write books to make money. There's no money in a book.
Right.
It's a huge amount of time. I do it because I don't have the ability to find another way to transfer this information to the people that need it.
When people aren't taught how this stuff works, and they're also just not empowered to believe that it can work.
Well, they are empowered. They have their own, they put their own shackles on, their own blinders on.
Yeah, I guess it's the pygmy, like you said, it's the inverse of the Pygmalion effect, or it's just the other side of it where nobody's expected, you're not expected to be successful if you're non-traditional, if you're you know, off the beaten path. It's you're branded as a malcontent or a rebel or a loser or a future loser just because you think differently, when you and I would suggest those are the people that are actually, they have the, if all other things were equal, they would have the highest probability of success. What changes that probability is the Pygmalion effect.
I'll tell you, you just touched on something that is the one competitive advantage the US has. We don't have exclusivity on money. We don't have the best educational system, right? Why is it that the US is such a source of innovation? Because we don't have the stigma of embarrassment that other cultures do. Our cultural heroes, I Love Lucy for my generation, she'd get a get rich quick scheme and would blow up and life goes on. Homer Simpson, get rich quick scheme, right. Tries it, life goes on, okay? In other countries, in Australia, they have an expression called don't be the tallest poppy.
Oh yeah.
Don't be noticed, don't let people see you, don't stand out. And I was down there touring the country, my book hit number one down there, talking to entrepreneurs. I'm like, how the hell do you get expect somebody to find your product or find your company if you're trying not to be noticed? I mean, right. This is alien to American thinking. Our brashness, our boldness, our no humility of trying stuff is a competitive advantage. Culturally, I've been working with other foreign governments to change their culture to encourage this behavior. In Eastern Europe, where my book's coming out in a bunch of languages, anybody my age or older grew up in communism. They have no role models of how does it happen. Yes, there's rich people, but oligarchs didn't exactly make it the entrepreneurial way.
Right.
Okay. So when you can show people, there's a reason why Silicon Valley continues to thrive is because it has generation after generation of risk capital and people with that mentality and a network effect. But it's now happening everywhere that people are taking those blinders off.
Hey, sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to let you know you can get a free copy of my book, The Millionaire Shortcut, which will show you the fastest way to become a millionaire in the new economy. And there's a special link just for this episode in the description. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. Do you think, and you know, we have a mutual friend, Evan Carmichael, who he was on my show probably a year and a half ago when I was just getting started, or I was really just starting to scale in the education business. And we were having this discussion about how his platform is really that the biggest problem facing the world is that people don't believe in themselves. And I would argue that's I agree with him, but I think that's actually a manifestation of a culture of, you know, the Australians call it the tallest poppy syndrome. I think of crabs in a bucket. Nobody likes, you know, when as soon as one crab starts to get out of the bucket, everybody else, all the other crabs start to pull them back in the bucket, right? Do you think that that's actually changing in this world? Because I still feel a lot of blowback on this idea that anyone can do anything if they set their mind to it.
What I'm seeing is those that are raising their hand and taking that first step are finding the resources now exist. Mm-hmm. There are incubators, there are startups, there are startup funds, there are meetups in virtually every city where people can get together and start things. So people have seen so much change in their lifetime, so many, you know, companies that you never heard of that next day have a billion users, you know, that they're getting into that. And so is that affecting the majority of people? No, because the majority of people aren't trying. The majority of people, you know, were told that they were sheep and are fine being sheep and commiserate with others that their life sucks and that they're broke. And, when I talk to crowds, you know, I've spoken in rooms with thousands of people and somebody comes up to me, I'd like to be a millionaire. And I'm like, okay, so what are you doing about it? I mean, right. And they give you this look on their face, like, I mean, there's something I should be doing about it. I mean, you know, most of the world's wealthy weren't born wealthy.
Yeah, that statistic has flipped in the last 40 years. It used to, I think in 1980 or 79, it was like 80% of millionaires inherited their money. And now I think it's like 85% are first generation.
Yeah. And the old way, Warren Buffett just hit 100 billion. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll be transparent. Warren's worth more than me. But he made 99% of that after he was 50. Would you rather be him or Kylie? Would you rather hit your billion in your 20s or in your 50s, right? You know, how much better could you have lived those years if you put in the work at the beginning and then get the multiplier effect? And deal structure, even if you're just a consultant to somebody to do something, deal structure can make you wealthy. Mm-hmm. Somebody wants to hire you for $5,000 to go and help them sell 1,000 widgets. say, if I sell 5,000, can I get this bonus? If I sell 10,000, can I get, you know,
right,
5% of the company? Everybody's going to say yes because they don't believe it's possible.
So yeah, you I was going
to
say
to anywhere and change anything.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, ultimately, because I hear this a lot, like, oh, because I mean, obviously I have a school for entrepreneurs. That's my business, Entre Institute. And people are like, oh, well, I don't have an idea, or I haven't invented anything, or I don't have an app, or a, and it's like, no, like the prerequisite for being an entrepreneur is one of, I guess, maybe a handful, is this belief in yourself that you can do something unique. But unique doesn't have to mean brand new. You can be a unique real estate agent. You can be a unique attorney. You can be a unique garbage man. You have, that means doing what it takes and thinking the way that it takes to be the best at it.
Well, that's exactly where I started with Bin. So I have an expression, you either have to be the best in the world at what you do, or the only one doing it. Because if you're the only one doing it, by definition, you're the best. So Vin, what do you want to do? What's your business? He goes, well, I spend a lot of time on social media. I should do social media for others. Well, if you're a broke kid on welfare, you're not suddenly going to get, you know, Coca-Cola calling, you know, saying, please do all our corporate, you know, social media.
Right,
it doesn't work that way. And by the way, there's probably 40 million other people out there that are social media influencers, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So I said, look at the zeitgeist. Look what people are talking about. Find something right now that's going on and market yourself as the social media expert for that one narrow thing. It's the same skill set, but do it for that one narrow thing where you're the only one. And then do whatever it takes to get that first client, even if the first client's for free. Because then you have what Harvard Business School calls a case study. Look what I did for this guy. I can do that for you. So the clients who were paying him $500 the first month, by month three, clients were paying for the same work, $30,000 a month, because he had a track record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you have to do. And you can do that again and again in any field. I mean, nowadays you hear about AI or augmented reality or crypto or social, name whatever you want. Where do you think those experts came from? Just somebody that raised their hand one day and said, I'm an expert. And then they fought really hard to defend that turf for as long as they could.
It's so true. So here's the other thing I think it's important to speak to in the mindset of the listener is, you know, it's easy to hear a list of people that did this thing and got this result and go, oh, and then, you know, we have this defense mechanism in our mind because, again, we're so committed to where we are and not where we, you know, at least Jay or Jeff would say we could be. Says, okay, well, that's great, but all those ideas are taken. You know, there's none left for me, right? There's like a scarcity or scarcity mindset around innovation.
That's where that 30-day process I have. By the end of that process, you will have 90 ideas. You will have more deal flow than the biggest venture capital firm. Then you sort those along two axes. One is what's called TAM, total addressable market. You know, if you have a thing for blind left-handed golfers, it's a small market, maybe not the best idea. So what's got the biggest market? And the other axis is equally important. What are you passionate about solving for? Because that passion, if you can cultivate passion, that'll take you a lot farther.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, anybody can come out with a new pair of shoes. You know, there's tons of shoes, who cares? But when Tom Shoes said, for every pair you buy, we give a pair to somebody that's never had shoes. Well, that made their customers feel better. That made employees want to work there. That made investors. That made a company. They didn't invent the shoe. They changed how the shoe could be an emotional experience.
Mm-hmm.
So these idea that you have to, you know, invent the PC, you know, like everybody thinks, because I talk about tech, that, oh, I can't be in tech. I'm not tech. You know what? If I gave you $1 million and said, go back 10 years, that you have to bet on the biggest tech company of the past 10 years that had the biggest return for shareholders in the stock market, what company would you pick?
In the last 10 years?
Yeah.
I might still pick Amazon, but
wasn't Google, wasn't Facebook, wasn't Microsoft. It was Domino's Pizza. You go, wait a second, you said tech company. Yeah, every company is a tech company. When Domino's became app-centric, so now they could market. They could get feedback. They could test market. They could, the majority of the employees of Domino's corporate are now in IT. It changed the whole trajectory. So you don't have to know anything about how to actually do the tech, right? You know, I would venture to say that the CEO of every major airline isn't a pilot. When I became CEO, president of EMI, the world's biggest music company, home of the Beatles, Elton John, et cetera, my mom called me and said, but Jay, you don't play an instrument. It's like, no, they didn't hire me to actually make the music.
Right.
They hired me to figure out what to do now that nobody's buying physical things.
Right.
So when you start seeing the world through the way that we're interconnected now, that you can find, that's why crowdfunding was such an amazing invention. You know, my hobby's magic. It's been my hobby since I was 4 years old. A new magician creates something, puts it up on crowdfunding. Magicians from all over the world pitch in because we all want to buy it. I mean, it works for anything. But in the old days, how would you have found any niche market at scale? How would you have found every jazz listener on the planet? Well, Google and Facebook and everybody's got that done for you. All you have to do is figure out how to make that person life a little bit easier. One little incremental change. Watch Shark Tank. That's all that those things are. Is somebody solved the problem for somebody.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to say this because 3 years ago, because I believe what you believe, I used a 9-month blitz of social media to plant the seeds, to get enough attention and build enough of an audience of the right people to launch the company that I told you about. And I never in the beginning, my total budget to launch the whole thing was $20,000. And that was to pay for ads once I'd built the audience basically for free. And, you know, like I said, now we're, you know, a really big company. We have almost 200 people on staff now in less than 2 years from dollar one because of what you're saying. Because you're right, 10, 20 years ago, I could have had all the same opinions about the educational system. I could have had all the same knowledge about how to help people that had been let down by the educational system or were frustrated or stuck in what they're doing. I wouldn't have had a way to reach them.
But now imagine that a major corporation gave you $20 million to do exactly what you just did, and they don't want a piece of your company. So I was brought in by Sony. Sony was late to the game to compete with iTunes and the iPod. How am I going to... Steve was spending $100 million a year advertising iTunes. My marketing budget for launching my store was $0.00. So how are you going to compete? This is for everybody that says, I don't have the money, you know, Again, I looked at what's going on in society. What companies are in trouble? Because anybody in trouble is more open to hearing a new idea than everybody that thinks that they're flawless. So that year, McDonald's, for the first time in history, sales went down. They went down 9% because of a movie called Super Size Me, where Spurlock eats it every day and nearly dies. So I said, okay. What does McDonald's have to do with me having a digital music store? I connect the dots, go to McDonald's, say, hey, I can make you hip and cool and get your sales up. Buy a Big Mac, get a free track. I'm going to put a code on every little box. You take care of the TV commercials, the signage in the store, the tray liners. They spent $60 million. And what are they really advertising? They're advertising for all their customers to come to my new store. I had 20 million paying customers the first week. My budget for that is $0.00. United Airlines wanted to come out of bankruptcy. They needed some PR. I went to them. I said, I can make you hip and cool. How do I connect the dots? We're going to do the first concert in the sky. Sheryl Crow from Chicago to LA doing a concert, fill the plane with the press, and announce that everybody that's stuck with United Frequent Flyer miles can get free music. And this will play on every flight for the next month. And I multiplied this, and I've done this over 100 times in every field, with car manufacturers, with beer companies, alcohol, where companies will spend millions and millions of dollars because whatever you think is unique about your company, the audience you're going after isn't unique. There's somebody else that wants to reach that audience that has a budget, but doesn't have an idea. So your idea goes and solves that problem for them.
And, you know, the thing I want to add to what you're saying that it's the other side of the coin of what you're saying. It's part and parcel of it is this belief piece, where it's the same reason that I, fully knowing what I was doing, gave away my idea on earlier on the show. It's not the greatest idea. I'm not attached to it. We could each have another one next week. The point is, it's so easy to stand out in this world through qualitative character-based choices about how you're going to show up and how you're going to attack things. Because you're right. Most people, it doesn't matter how good the ideas are, how good the opportunities are, how much support they're given. They're not, if it's outside of the box that they've already defined as their identity box, they're not going to do the work.
It's one of the first conversations.
You can differentiate yourself right away.
One of the first conversations I had with Vin. Vin had long hair to his shoulders. He wore gold lame one-piece jumpsuit. He was like a kid that went to the clubs at night or whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, even though you're not going to have to see these people and you're just going to be dealing 90% of your customers via Zoom, you're going to have to get a new wardrobe and when you can afford it, and you're going to have to cut your hair. He goes, why should that make a difference? I said, well, every barrier that makes it harder for you to make a sale is just hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
The more you can seem like the person you're selling to, the easier it will be to make that sale, right? It wasn't a person born on the planet that wanted to wear a tie. Everybody else was wearing, so you had to. When I went into the music business and I had this big global job, I'm like, I got to wear a suit. This is important. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar corporation. And one day, the vice chairwoman of Virgin Records says, Jay, do you see anybody around here that looks like you? And I stopped and I'm like, oh, now I get it. Mm-hmm. I went and bought all black clothes, black t-shirts, black jeans. I look like Johnny Cash. I only wore black for the next number of years. And I fit in.
Right.
Right? I didn't want my message of everything that I wanted to do that was changing different to get lost by the packaging. So yes, people can say you're selling out. Great. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about how are you going to be successful? Okay. Once you have that success, if you want to be, you know, Hugh Hefner and only wear pajamas for the rest of your life,
right?
Go do it. But you're going to have to start at a point where somebody can relate to you so that that message can be heard.
Yeah, that's so well said. Selling out. I mean, I think sold out is usually a good sign in a business.
I mean, right? You know, that's what, you know, we had the same conversations with, you know, artists, you know, and, you know, their careers are taken off and they get offered huge amounts of money to do in a commercial or have their music in a movie or this or that. And I'm like, is it something so offensive in this movie? Or could you reach people that might not have heard your music before that may fall in love with this movie? And because of that, you branch out to other things. I mean, so it's all how you convey the message. You know, people thought we were crazy when we started doing ringtones. What do you mean? You're going to license just 8 seconds of my song?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's that hurting you? You know, one artist who I became friends with, Akon, did almost a half a billion units of ringtone sales.
Oh my gosh. That was like a decade. When was that? 2010-ish? Because I think I had that ringtone when I lived in New York.
When my first company, at one point I had 7 of the top 10 best-selling video games. Okay. This is when video game market was really small and no major competition. Mm-hmm. When the Microsofts and everybody else came in, Jay ran to the next thing. But it dawned on me one day when computers suddenly had sound cards that video games could be more than beep, beep, boop, boop, boop. They could have real rock and roll. So how do I get into that business? I wasn't in that business at that time. So I wrote to Bill Gates. I said, this will sell more people to buy PCs and play games. Would you write a letter of introduction for me to David Geffen, the richest man in the music industry? I had never met Bill Gates. Bill did it. The richest man in the world sends you something, you take the meeting.
Right.
And with David Geffen, I then went around to artists, showed them the game, explained it. Aerosmith has made more money from being in video games than from record sales. Let that sink in.
Wow.
Okay. Most of the people that, you know, that made tons of money didn't make it the way that you think. It goes back to deal structure. Steven Spielberg didn't become a billionaire because of directing great movies. He directed great movies. He's the world's greatest director. But when his lawyer realized that Universal was making rights out of these things, they negotiated for him to get a piece of every ticket ever sold at every theme park forever. When Lucas couldn't get what he wanted to direct Star Wars, he said, okay, give me the merch rights. And they're like, it's not going to sell any merchandise, right? Billions and billions and billions of dollars later, you know, that's where the wealth came from. So it doesn't hurt to ask when you structure every deal for something that you know the value of that the other doesn't.
So fascinating, man. This is like hard for me to say. And I told you before we hit record that we're going to have a lot to talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time.
Let me add one thing for people that made it this far. If you go to jaysamit.com, I don't sell anything. jaysamit.com. I have free companion workbooks for both Disrupt You and Future Proofing You. So you can get them, download them, and start changing your life today.
I actually was looking at that earlier and I think that's so cool. I'm actually working on a book that's coming out next spring and I love the idea of an accompanying workbook. That's something I actually made a note of when I looked at your site. So where else can people find you? Do you do social media? Is there any other way that people can, I mean, you have an immense genius of a brain. How can people access more?
I'm pretty easy to find. So yeah, you can find me on all LinkedIn, Instagram.
Okay. Is there Twitter, one that you're Facebook. Kind of, is there one that you're, you feel like you're most active on?
I'm not active. When I have something important to say, I say it.
Oh my gosh. Imagine that. That's an innovation right there. You're not telling us what you had for lunch every day,
but I can reach a few million people. So I respect their time. And you know, what I focus on are now things that solve problems for the most people. So I'm chairman of a company that's taking poison out of all of our food and healing the planet. I mean, I didn't want to be a chairman again, but I felt morally obligated to make sure that this company succeeds. So, you know, I don't know how much time I have. None of us do. You can't live forever, but what you create in your lifetime can. And that should be what drives people to really make the most out of every day and every opportunity. So I thank you for sharing your audience. And for everybody, you know, if you can hear my voice, I believe in you. I don't have to know you. I learned that from Tom Bilyeu. You're human. Humans are amazing. So I look forward to seeing what everybody creates.
You just finished this episode of the Millionaire Secrets Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like and share this episode and do leave us a review. Let us know how we impacted you today. Your next step toward creating your awesome life is to join me and thousands of others in the Entre Nation community, where you'll receive free training, networking with other awesome life seekers, access to live events, discounts, merchandise, and other awesome perks. Head over to www.entrenation.com. That is www.entrenation.com and join us today. And of course, do please follow me on social media. I can be found on all the major social networks at Jeff Lerner Official. Thank you again for listening and please go be awesome.